From London, it's the Wired.co.uk podcast. It's episode 14 for Friday, the 25th of February, 2011. Last year was the year of the iPad in terms of tablet computers, but 2011 is looking like it could be quite different. Apple has announced a special media event for the 2nd of March where it's expected it'll unveil the iPad 2. But this time round, it's got a hell of a lot of contenders to fight. So we'll discuss what to expect in tablets this year in depth. But first, it's the week in Wired News. Hello, I'm Nate Langston, as you know. And I'm the editor of Wired.co.uk, and joining me smoking a peace pipe in the Wired wigwam today is staff writer Duncan Gear.
Hello.
Who kindly wrote that without me even realising it was there. That's genius.
It still said the tandem thing from last week.
Did it? Yeah, I don't edit that bit very much. But also joining us in the wigwam is Wired's new product editor, Jim Hill.
Yes, I've just joined, brand new out of the box, and I've been let loose on Wired magazine and, to a certain extent, the website.
You have indeed. And we're going to talk about some Apple stuff. So Apple has announced a special event for the 2nd of March. I think it's going to be the iPad 2. Duncan, do you?
Yeah.
Great. Jim, do you?
I think that's a given. Yep.
Great. Well, in other news,
the iPad and the 2 on the invite probably clued us in.
Yeah, it did. It had a giant picture of an iPad creeping behind a giant 2. So we think it's going to be the iPad 2.
The chances are good.
They actually announced some new MacBook Pros, though, today as well. Which seemed pretty exciting. Jim, you use a Mac, don't you?
Yes, I do. And I use a MacBook Air. So I was interested in MacBook Pros, but not excited. And sure enough, they look pretty similar to the old ones. Exactly the same size and weight. A few new features.
Yeah, much faster graphics. They've gone with AMD graphics, which apparently are even faster than the NVIDIA ones. As my old friend Ian Morris used to say, NVIDIA, in the last few models. Yeah, well, that's
kind of weird because for a little while, NVIDIA's been a little bit ahead in terms of the graphics race, but maybe ATI is creeping back in.
Well, we'll certainly see. We're going to discuss the iPad in quite a bit of depth, I imagine, later on in our feature, so we're going to move on. There has been a millimeter-wide computer created that could be injected into your eye. Duncan.
Yeah, this is a story that Mark wrote for us earlier in the week. He found a group of computer engineers and scientists from the University of Michigan. And what they work on is glaucoma research. And of course, when you've got glaucoma, it's about pressure building up inside your eye, and it causes optic nerve damage and can lead to people going blind. So it's kind of a big problem, but it's difficult to monitor because it doesn't really hurt. And so patients only don't get checked very often. And these guys have built a millimeter wide computer. It's a cubic millimeter in size.
It's about the size of a pinhead.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. And it sits inside your eye. You can't see it because it's kind of, there's lots of space inside the eye that isn't very used for very much.
Except for floaters in my eye.
Yeah. Well, they're on the surface, I guess, of your eye.
Yeah, I suppose.
But yeah, and inside this computer, it's got pretty much everything that you need. It's got a microprocessor, ultra-low-power microprocessor, a battery, a solar cell, memory, a pressure sensor, and a wireless chip with an antenna.
Whoa, hang about. So this thing's actually powered by the sun. So if you stare at the sun, you're effectively recharging your glaucoma monitor.
Exactly that. It only consumes about 5.3 nanowatts of power, and when it's not in use, it just kind of shuts off and wakes up every, I think, 15 minutes to get a reading, and then goes to sleep again.
And so it's sending data to a device, obviously outside of your eye, for you to monitor,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it basically just sends the data out. You hold a sort of little reader next to the thing, and it will give you a reading off. It can store up to, I think, a week's worth of readings in one go. And it gets kind of charged up automatically in your daily life. It needs 1.5 hours of natural sunlight or 10 hours of indoor light will recharge it completely.
But there's other uses possibly too. The idea is that you could possibly even implant these, because they're basically little computers, inside smart objects, so you could monitor for things like pollution or, you know, structural integrity, stuff like that, and maybe even have them as trackable object, maybe, as part of the Internet of Things, which we've discussed at length in the past.
And there's some fascinating stuff you could do with fluid dynamics too. I mean, with things like this, if you're talking about a millimeter in size, the wind can pick up something like that. So you can really properly start studying turbulence in much, much more detail if you've got a cloud of tiny little computers that are getting whooshed around and they know their position.
Jim, if someone came to you and said, we want to install a glaucoma monitor in your eyeball, would you say, yes, that sounds great? Or would you say, no, I don't want to be a cyborg, get away from me, you crazy man?
I'd say thanks, but no thanks. Having worked with technology for so long, I've got a very healthy distrust of computers and technology. You know this thing is going to go wrong at some point, and then someone's going to have to fish around in there and get the thing out and reboot it.
That's the kind of skepticism I like to hear. In other news, this is amazing. I love any instance where we can use the term new dinosaur, because it's something of it's just such an oxymoron. But I want to know about thunder thighs, the dinosaur that evolved to kick smaller dinosaurs away.
This is an old dinosaur has just been discovered. It's a type of it's a Brontomerus McIntoshi, which has been found in eastern Utah. It was actually found during the 90s, but it's taken paleontologists about 5 to 10 years to work out exactly what kind of animal it is.
And it's a dinosaur.
It is indeed a dinosaur. But it's a particularly interesting dinosaur because it has this massive, great big hip bone that is much, much bigger than sort of similarly sized other dinosaurs. And it has this wide blade-shaped bit that projects forwards, giving a massive area for a thigh muscle to attach to, and leading to this sort of principle that it would have a huge, mighty kick.
So this beast was knocking about during the Cretaceous period, about 100, 110 million years ago, and was contending with a lot of raptors and things like that in, you know, wherever it was living.
Yeah,
so it basically evolved these huge legs that could give a massive kick, and also to, I assume, make it more attractive to the opposite
ladies.
Dino sex.
The ladies do like an enormous thigh.
They do.
Lady dinosaurs. Yeah, it's kind of in the same family. If you want to get a mental picture, it's in the same family as the Diplodocus and the Brachiosaurus. It's a herbivore. It likes eating trees and stuff like that. But it also likes kicking stuff out of the way.
How big are we talking, though? It was 14 metres-ish, about 40 metres long, about half a tonne.
Yeah, yeah, along those lines.
About the size of an elephant.
Yeah, yeah. And they also found a child skeleton right next to it, which was about 4.5 meters long and weighed about 200 kilograms, about the same as a pony or a cow.
This is a child dinosaur, of
Yes, not an actual child.
That would have been a discovery.
That would have been a hell of a discovery.
Pony-sized child.
I'm impressed by the paleontologists, because they didn't find the whole skeleton, just fragments, and they managed to identify these gigantic hip bones, as you say, that were completely upscale with everything else.
Yeah, so they found a shoulder, a couple of vertebrae, a few ribs, and the hip. And the hip was the important
bit. Completely enormous. And does that mean that it also had an enormous bum as well?
Quite possibly. I didn't check out its bum.
Well, I, for one, welcome our new dino overlords.
Whatever their bum size.
Yes. Well, things that don't have bums include Kinect sensors. Another tenuous segue there from the people that brought you... What was it I said last week? There was something I said.
I can't remember.
Oh, it's probably irrelevant.
You'll
anyway.
have to listen to last week's podcast to find out.
I really haven't got the time. Anyway, so Microsoft has released official Kinect developer kits for Windows. Kinect is the 3D sensor technology that allows you to play games a little bit like the Wii or the PlayStation Move.
Wave your hand like an idiot in front of your TV and it says, what?
Exactly. You know, no controllers, or you are the controller, or whatever marketing spiel. And Microsoft has been pretty against hacking up until a lot of people started doing it and they couldn't really control it. And so it's kind of good to see that they've basically embraced this and they are going to be releasing a kit initially, I think, for people like academic researchers and enthusiasts to make applications that can be run on Windows but use the Xbox Kinect's hardware. And then down the line, there'll be a version being released that companies can basically license in order to sell the Kinect-based games and software for PC use. Now, I think this is a really pretty important step because Microsoft typically isn't what you would call a massive supporter of open source and hacking.
No, definitely not. And it's a 100% U-turn on their previous position, which is really interesting.
Because you went to meet them a while ago, didn't you? And they were pretty against all this open source hacking.
I went to one of the preview days for Kinect and had a go just before it came out. And I asked them specifically about hacking, because it's quite a cool bit of kit. You know, you get a depth sensor, you get a microphone, and it's all robotically controlled and everything. And it's relatively cheap for that kind of kit.
I think it's about £120 now, isn't it?
Yeah, something along those lines. And and I asked them about the hacking and they said, no, definitely. We've made this utterly unhackable. Nobody is going to be able to get their hands on it. It's not, you know, what we're trying to do with it. It's a nice idea. It's just not what we're trying to do. This is for games only. And of course, what, 2 weeks later, there were open source drivers on the internet. It's fantastic. fantastic. And so I guess as a result of that, and the way they've kind of spun it is they've said that, you know, we've seen all this cool stuff and so we're putting out a development kit for other people to use it. But I don't know. I think probably what they're trying to do is get some of this stuff official and get it a bit more under their wing.
Yeah, if Microsoft's actually going to do this, and by supporting it, then they can actually make some money off licensing it. And Microsoft makes most of its money from licensing, you know, whether it's Windows, whether it's Office, you know, that's basically where it makes its money rather than selling physical products.
Yeah, I think it's not just money. It's also kind of goodwill, you know. All these people making unofficial Kinect hacks will suddenly be making official Kinect hacks that are blessed by Microsoft, and it makes Microsoft look better if they're doing that kind of stuff.
What do you think of Kinect, Jim?
I love it. And
have you got one at home?
I did have briefly. I'm onto PlayStation Move now. Just like to try them all out.
That's the one that looks a bit like a lady's massager, but with a glowing ball on the end, yeah.
It does a little bit, but it glows.
Yeah. I haven't actually played with the Sony Move since it's been released commercially. I had a bit of a play with it beforehand, but I'm still yet to get one into the House of Langston to be playing with. Have you played with the Move, Duncan?
I haven't actually. No, not at all. Not at all. I had a brief go with the Kinect, and obviously I played on the Wii, but I've not tried the...
You can try mine after.
That's very kind. Thank you.
Well, in other news, in fact, in our last bit of main news, a Chinese firm, Huawei, who makes a lot of dongles for...
That's the name of the company.
Yeah, that is the name of the company.
Sure, we need to spell that.
We probably do, actually. Yeah, it's H-U-A-W-E-I, which I pronounce Huawei. They have offered to install a 3G mobile network on the London Underground in time for the Olympics, essentially as a gift from one Olympic host to another.
It's rather kind of them.
Do you think? I know there's some people have been skeptical.
Well, what they're planning to do is install the... Well, they're offering to provide all of the kit, and then it looks like some phone networks in Britain will contribute towards the installation costs, and of course Huawei then get cash from maintaining it then later when it breaks down, when it gets chewed through by the tube's rat population.
Mice, mostly.
Yeah, well, yeah, a bit of both.
It's kind of a forked species of mouse with their own breed of mosquito down there.
Yeah, the tube is an odd place.
Very weird place.
For evolution. But anyway, yeah. Talks have begun on wiring it up and everything. The TFL wouldn't tell us too much about their involvement. They're still trying to work out the details, I think.
Cool. I think it's probably about time we had network under the tube.
Yeah, I mean lots of other countries do.
So I appreciate that it's probably quite challenging to install a phone network. But let's be honest, it's not impossible.
I'm surprised none of our own networks have stepped up and done it, but I'm delighted.
I think it's just because it's expensive. I mean, you've got an awful long... most of the lines, certainly the ones that run underground, go for a long, long way. And, that's a lot of cabling.
It's probably the same reasons we've been told we can't have air conditioning or heating or any of the other things that make the tube bearable.
Well, despite the fact all the other countries around the world have managed all of these things.
Well, I'm glad that we're leaving up to China to help us out here. But I'll tell you someone who isn't. Do you remember the Tory MP Patrick Mercer?
He was the guy that was
removed from the front bench in 2007 for making comments that were deemed maybe inappropriate.
Little bit racist, perhaps.
Possibly. Well, he is quoted in the Sunday Times as saying on this subject, "It has been proven that a proportion of the cyber attacks on this country come from China. I wonder, when the eyes of the world are upon us, whether there is a sense in using a Chinese firm to install a sensitive mobile network."
Amazing.
It's almost like he's saying it's a Trojan horse.
I think he's a bit paranoid and perhaps a bit confused as well.
This company's been making quite a lot of dongles for us for quite a long amount of time.
Yeah, if you've got a 3G broadband dongle, you are probably using a Huawei one.
Yeah, and I don't think we've had a downfall yet, so I'm going to go ahead and say, if you're listening, shut up. You're talking nonsense. And on that note, we're going to move on to our feature this week, where we're going to talk about the future of tablets next year. Yes, the future of tablets next year. That is the name of this section. Last year, obviously, was the iPad's year in terms of tablet success. It dominated pretty much everyone's tablet shopping list. But this year is looking to be massively different. But before we talk about the iPad 2, I want to have a quick look back at some of the highlights from 2010. Aside from the iPad 1, there were only really a couple...
A few more, weren't
there? ...of other tablets. There were anything more than just kind of OEM devices with Android slapped on it.
Me too. devices.
Exactly. One of them was the Galaxy Tab, which was kind of the one that everyone thought, is this going to be an, you know, the iPad killer?
I never worked out whether the Galaxy Tab sold well or didn't, because there was a big news story about it selling millions and millions and millions, and then it was like, well, no, actually, we just shipped millions and millions and millions.
Yeah, a common tactic there. Yes, we have shipped millions of these devices.
I couldn't quite tell if they sold that many.
Well, I know that in an earnings call, it was revealed that the number that they've actually sold was a lot lower than the number they quoted as shipping, which is kind of what generally happens in these situations. And the companies come out saying, yes, we shipped loads, two shops that didn't sell them, that sort of thing. So, and that's kind of what happened with the Galaxy Tab. And it's a shame because the Tab in many ways was a really nice piece of kit.
Really?
It was just, well, it was just overpriced for what it was. Mm. If you can imagine, I saw it just this morning, actually, when I was doing some research, that the Tab is now £399 on Amazon. And when it came out, it had an RRP of like £800, which priced it more than the iPad. And I think that as a £399 device, it's actually quite nice. You know, it's well built, it's got 3G, it's, you know, decent version of Android, great screen.
It also had Samsung's rubbish UI modifications all over it.
That never helped.
It was very well specified when it came out, but I think it was always a product that was destined for landfill, really, because we all knew that the sequel would be around the corner. Mm. And
it was a kind of stopgap.
Yeah, and that's why I think not many people actually bought it.
Mm. Well, one of the other ones we thought was going to be around the corner was the HP Slate, which was looking like a really hot contender to compete with the iPad when
I remember them showing it off at CES last year.
There was a very weird spec sheet that came out that sort of had a side-by-side comparison of all the specs it had versus all the specs the iPad had. And on paper, at least, you know, it looked like a more technically impressive device, but it was basically tablet vaporware. It was never really announced. It just was known to exist but never actually got released. And then, of course, HP bought Palm, and then now we've got the HP Touchpad, which is basically the thinking behind the HP Slate, but with the Palm OS, essentially. And we'll talk about that a bit more later. And you know what's weird? I had to Google 2010 tablets because there were so few that stood out that I couldn't even remember more than the HP Slate, which never came out, the Galaxy Tab, which was okay but a bit meh compared to everything else, and the iPad. That was it.
There must have been a couple of like smaller manufacturer ones, like Chinese and Taiwanese sort of OEMs.
Well, Asus and MSI had a couple last year that were, I think they were basically Android tablets. And, you know, that's one of the problems that's been wrong with these tablets last year is that, you know, they've basically been rushed to market. You know, as you were saying earlier, Jim, they are basically Me Too devices. Yeah. And it's kind of, you know, we see Apple's taking this market and they've been, you know, a good couple of years ahead of everyone else in terms of R&D. And so everyone had to say, we can't let them in the market, rush out there and make a tablet.
I think they need to be seen to be in that market, so they need to rush something out. And in a lot of cases, it is a copycat device.
Yeah, and a lot of the times it was basically just like stock Android, and the bottom line is that it was kind of an upscaled.
You say that like that's a bad thing. I mean, stock Android. I'd much rather have a device running stock Android than Android with one of the, you know, with HTC Sense or TouchWiz or Moto Blur or anything like that on it. I'd much rather have stock Android.
But the difference between stock Android on a phone and stock Android on a tablet is very, very different.
It is, yeah.
And that's basically the point, is that they were...
It was an OS that isn't designed for a big screen. It's designed for a little screen. It's just been upscaled.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of a real shame, but that's where 2011 becomes quite interesting, right? Because we've got the iPad 2 as obviously the main one. And let's talk a bit about that, because the event was announced last night or a couple of days ago, depending on when you're listening to this. And March 2nd of March, however you want to format the date, iPad 2 is expected to be announced. And there's a few things that we think are going to be incorporated. And I think one of them is going to be cameras, right? Because
get your scorecards out. We're going to see in a week's time how many of these you got right.
Do you want me to run down the list of things I think is going to be in the iPad
2? Yeah, go on. Yeah. Nate's predictions.
So here are my predictions, and you can hold me to these. These are the things I think is going to be in the iPad 2. Firstly, thinner design, because every time Apple releases a product, they become at least one mil thinner.
They shave a millimeter off.
They do. They become smaller, and sometimes smaller and fatter, width-wise. I think it'll have at least one camera, but probably two cameras, because FaceTime is now on the Mac. It's on the iPhone 4. It's clearly being pushed as...
By twin cameras, you mean front and back,
I mean a camera on the front and a camera on the back, yeah. So you can be looking at someone, but you can also switch the camera around and film the cat. I mean, it's basically what I do.
It seems like an obvious one for the pad, doesn't it?
It's definitely. No, I was just asking because the LG tablet that's coming out soon is 3D and it's got three cameras on it. It's got stereoscopic on the back and then a front-facing one.
Well, funnily enough,
I tried that. You know you need the glasses to see the 3D effect.
The anaglyph ones.
Anaglyphic, yeah.
Wow.
We are actually going to talk a little bit about the LG, but I want to get and finish my scorecard so people can judge how right or wrong I am. I think it's going to have a faster processor. I think it's going to be about 1.4 gigahertz or maybe
1.4, wow. I think
so. We've seen that in the HP. So the HP touchpad has a 1.4 gigahertz processor.
One gigahertz, I reckon.
But I think a more likely guess will be 1.2.
All right, maybe.
Okay. So 1.2. I think it's going to have much faster graphics. They've been putting a lot of effort into using these devices as gaming systems, and I think that graphics are one of the things that the iPad, the iPhone 4, can arguably do better because it has more memory. SD card slot? No?
No way. Never going to happen. Far too hackable.
Really? No, not their technology.
No.
They're competing with netbooks here. You need to be able to load photos onto them.
It would be incredibly useful.
It would be amazing, but you will never see that. Don't believe that for a sec. Carry on.
Well, forget Duncan. It's going to be there, I'm sure. Twice the RAM, I've already mentioned that. Three-axis gyroscope. This does not exist on the current iPad, but it does exist on the iPhone 4. And that's the thing where, basically, you know, if you move the iPhone 4 around you, it knows that it's moving in space around. So it's, you
that's
know,
as opposed to
perfect for augmented reality.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that.
Exactly. And also, I think it'll have some more multi-touch gestures, but that's kind of a given.
Yeah.
You know, there are only really a pinch and zoom and swipe on the current one. So they are my predictions. You can
and
hold me to them.
What about resolution? I think the resolution is going to be upped. I know a couple of people that have opted out of the iPad and gone back to iPhone 4 because screen's smaller, but it's actually sharper.
Yeah.
So I think Apple are going to fix that and at least double the resolution.
Can we? I mean, what resolution does it run at the moment? It's 1024 by 768, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. So it's high definition already. Mm. So perhaps they'll put it up to
1280?
Full HD. That's HD, but perhaps they'll push it to 1080p
you reckon?
Full HD.
Yeah. Do you reckon? 1680 by, what would that be? 1680 by 1080?
By at least 1080, unless they double it, and then it'll be, you know,
because it's in 4.3, isn't it, rather than in 10.9.
I think that one of the reasons why I don't think that is going to be the case is because basically in the iPhone 4, you've got this retina display thing that they like to call it.
Yeah.
It's basically just an incredibly high-res screen. If they took the same pixel density that the iPhone 4 has and blow that up to the 9.5-inch screen that the iPad has, we're going to be talking a resolution about 25,000 pixels wide.
Yeah.
Or, sorry, 2,500 pixels wide, which is just so big.
We're pretty sure no one's manufacturing that, so I think we can rule out retina.
Yeah, certainly
display.
Not in that size.
Yeah.
But we also know that Apple had put a massive, massive order in with an unknown company for about $3.7 billion for a components deal over a number of years. And it's rumored that possibly that could be either the displays or CPU and flash memory. But I don't know. There are hints that the screen resolution could be upped. And the advantage there is that your text is sharper and your images are clearer.
Yeah, and just great for showing off. It'll just make it look like a more dazzling product in the shop.
Yeah, definitely. So that's iPad 2. We will be we're going to be at the event next week for the launch anyway. So we'll know everything by this time next week, I guess. So expect more next week on the iPad. But that's only half the argument, because 2011 is also going to see some of the other big contenders get into the tablet ring that weren't ready to take part last year. And one of those is the Motorola Zoom, Duncan, which you've seen in person and I haven't.
I have. Yeah, I had a little play with it. It wasn't fully working at the time, and we weren't allowed to properly touch it ourselves. It had to be demonstrated in front of us. And even then, they were just playing videos on it to show off the features. It was a bit weird. They were showing videos on the device of the things that the device could do, but it wasn't actually happening on the device itself. So that was a bit of a weird experience. But it's a really nice bit of kit. It's I think the first reviews have started to come in from the United States. They seem to be mostly positive. They're basically saying this could be really good. There's a few little niggles that need to be sorted out, but
well, we put our review up actually of it this morning from one of the US guys, and he gave it 6 out of 10.
Yeah, which I thought was a bit harsh personally.
I think so too. I had a little go on the Zoom at Mobile World Congress.
That was last week.
Oh, so it must have been running a bit better by that point.
It was running, and they were letting people actually use it. It was running very smoothly, actually. Worked very quickly. Very nice use of Android on there. And the thing itself was well made as well. It had a kind of like half metal backplate, so it felt quite robust compared to some of the others.
I know that CNET.com at, I think at CES last month, gave the Zoom the sort of Best of CES award for that product. So there's a lot of excitement, and it's one that I'm really looking forward to playing with. But
it's one that Google's really excited about as well. I mean, they've pretty much crowned it as the, you know, the king of the current generation that are coming out. It's very, very high spec, but it's also coming with quite a high price, and that's what I'm worried about, particularly in Britain, because we tend to get a bit of a gadget tax over here.
It's good to see Motorola back in the game because, you know, they used to be a big player in phones in the Razr days and have kind of sort of dropped off the radar ever since then.
This is really good for them. Yeah,
yeah, I think it's good for them. But one of the other ones we've seen is the HP Touchpad, and this is the one that I am personally looking forward to most, alongside the new iPad, because it's basically the Palm Pre OS but on a tablet. And the Palm Pre OS always felt like it should be on a tablet, and now it's going to be. And I think that the HP Touchpad has, in many ways, everything that people want from the iPad, with the exception of apps. And I think that if you're someone who is basically looking for maybe a cheaper version of the iPad, we don't know how much it's going to cost yet.
I think it'll still be pretty expensive.
Probably, but it would be in their interest to make it slightly cheaper. And if you don't want to be in the whole Apple world, then the HP Touchpad, I genuinely think, could be the one that people will look at and probably should look at as a contender, because the UI is basically the same. All the things like the email applications, even the keyboard, all this kind of stuff, it all looks exactly like the iPad.
It's pretty much a third option. If you've decided that Apple, you don't want to go down that route, but you're not entirely convinced by Android, then yeah, WebOS is a contender.
I think so. Have you played with the HP Touchpad yet, Jim?
No, that's the one I haven't seen. No. So you've seen it, Duncan.
Yeah, I went out to, in fact, you heard me from San Francisco 2 weeks ago, if you were listening to the podcast then, talking about it. Yeah, it's a nice touchpad. I wouldn't buy one myself, but then that's because I'm kind of excited about the big Android ecosystem that is looming.
Well, let me interrupt you there, because I know that you've got kind of a bet with yourself that if there isn't a decent Android tablet this year,
you're quoting me from about, what, 6 or 7 podcasts back?
That you are going to buy an iPad.
Yep.
Which,
I said, in fact, not even by the end of the year, but by July, I said, if there isn't a really good Android tablet by then, I'll get an iPad 2.
And this is coming from the man that I honestly think, and I don't think I'm being disrespectful here, you would actually marry a robot if it was running Android, right? If there was a humanoid robot running Android.
As long as it
was
Honeycomb, yeah.
Yeah.
Android 3.0.
That's not unfair to say, is it? I'm being honest.
I think it's a nice device. I think the app thing is really the killer for me. I couldn't buy a device that doesn't have the support and the massive great big catalogue of apps, because apps are what make tablets and phones right now really exciting and really good and really incredible. It lets anybody develop software for your machine, and I've been clamoring for that for years.
So the Motorola Zoom is going to be the Android tablet to look at this year if you don't want an iPad, and the HP
and
the HP Touchpad is a third option if you don't want Android or the iPad. There is also going to be the BlackBerry Playbook, and this is BlackBerry's kind of entry into the world of tablets, but with the businessman in mind, which is basically, again, your typical tablet features, but it's going to incorporate the BlackBerry email, which for a lot of people could become a deal killer if they're not bothered either way.
Do you think it'll have a tiny QWERTY keyboard at the bottom?
I don't know. But I have heard a rumor that you will have to use it with a BlackBerry phone in order to use the data.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's going to be true or not, or if they'll change it down the line, but rumors suggest that that's going to be the case.
That makes a lot of sense, because you get BlackBerry fans, don't you, and you cannot get the BlackBerry off them.
Exactly.
They will love this tab.
Yeah, and it's another option, I think, there. And then there's the Dell Streak 10, which I think is Dell Streak run Android, or is that running Windows?
No, that's definitely running Android.
That's an Android
one
as well.
We haven't. I mean, they just basically waved it around, saying, "Yeah, we're doing this." They haven't really specified any of the specs or the pricing or anything about it just yet. We just know it's got a 10-inch screen, and there's going to be a 7-inch version and a 5-inch version. And in fact, there are some versions of the Streak out there already.
Yeah.
I put together a spreadsheet the other day of all the 10-inch Android tablets that are coming out soon, and there's 13 or 14 of them. I mean, we've mentioned the Zoom already in the Streak. Asus has got 2 ePads, one of them which kind of folds up into to kind of become a laptop. It's got a QWERTY keyboard in it.
Asus, by the way, the company that kind of made the netbook popular, the EPC guys.
Exactly, yeah. And this is the ePad Transformer and the ePad Slider. They're 2 entries into this. Then you've got the LG Optimus Pad, which is the 3D one that we mentioned before. That's only a 9-inch one, but it's close enough, I reckon. The Samsung Galaxy Tab 10-inch. That'll be interesting to see how they update the Galaxy Tab. You've got the Acer Iconia Tab A500, and they've got a Windows 7 version as well. well, which is the W500. And Windows 7 has kind of got left out of this whole tablet rush. It was always going to be the touchscreen OS for Microsoft.
Maybe that's because it's a desktop operating system, and desktop operating systems are stupid on a tablet.
Then you've got the ViewSonic ViewPad, you've got the Arcos 10.1, the Panasonic Viera tablet that we don't know much about yet, the Lenovo ViewPad. Creative have got a tablet, and then there's the intriguing Notion Ink Atom, which not that many people seem to know that much about yet, but I think it's started to ship now, hasn't it?
I think it has. I haven't seen one in the flesh, though, yet. It was at Mobile World Congress, though, right? I think it was at Mobile World Congress, or maybe CES?
Yeah.
Not sure.
I think it was at CES, yeah.
No one seems to have paid much attention to it.
So, I mean, and those are just the Android ones, so there's a whole lot of tablets.
All these tablets, or at least the majority of them, were at Mobile World Congress last week, which is kind of the biggest mobile trade show, mobile phone trade show in the world. It takes place every year in Barcelona. Jim, you were there just before actually joining Wired, so and I know you had a thought on another tablet that you saw out there.
I saw a lot of tablets out there. In fact, that was really the big theme of the show. Mobile phones almost second place.
But there was an HTC tablet that you were talking about that we haven't mentioned, actually.
That was, the HTC presentation was fantastic. It broke down halfway through, but the products that they were talking about were great. And the tablet, the HTC Flyer, looks really promising. It's made of metal, really nicely made, a unibody aluminium. Uh-huh. So it looks like an Apple product.
Kind of like the iPad itself.
Yeah, very much so.
It's a bit smaller, isn't it?
It's smaller, it's only 7-inch, and it was only running Gingerbread and not Honeycomb.
Okay.
But of course, that's fully upgradable later on, and comes with a stylus, which some people might not like.
Oh,
but
interesting.
But I, you know, it was really good fun to use.
Flying in the face of what Steve Jobs reckons.
Flying in the face of fashion.
Shipping a tablet with a stylus, isn't that like shipping a Mac with a floppy disk drive?
That's a bit unfair. It was lots of fun anyway, and you don't actually need this stylus for day-to-day work.
Well, you were at Mobile World Congress, of course, but also one of my friends, Flora Graham from CNET UK, where I actually used to work, was also there. And she had a few interesting opinions on some of the 3D products that were out there, too. So I'm going to give her a call. Hey, Flora, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Nate. How are you?
I'm extremely well. I'm kind of gutted I didn't get out to Mobile World Congress this year, but you did.
It was pretty amazing. Absolutely, yeah, it was great. There was a lot of exciting stuff on the floor.
So you saw a load of tablets. It seems like tablets were really the big thing this year. Would you agree there?
Definitely, it's amazing the crossover as well. I mean, you're getting things calling themselves phones that are 5 inches, and things that are calling themselves tablets that are 7 inches. So, I think mobile devices is the word of the year, definitely.
And was there, walking around, you probably saw absolutely dozens and dozens and dozens. Was there any one that you would want to steal and smuggle back to Britain?
I have to say I've got a personal favorite, and that has to be the Motorola Zoom. That's Google's flagship tablet for its new version of the Android operating system, which is calling 3.0 Honeycomb. And there's a few Honeycomb tablets out there, and they're not all that different. I mean, the Samsung Galaxy Tab 10.1 is quite similar size to the Zoom, same operating system and user interface. But the Motorola Zoom has a few extra perks. It's got a micro HDMI out. It's got a micro SD card slot, even though it won't work when it actually comes out. It'll get upgraded with an over-the-air update. So to me, that's what puts it kind of at the very front runner of the latest Android tablets.
Did you actually get to play with some of the 3D ones then, the LG one that I think has two cameras on the back so it can record in 3D? Is that right?
Yeah, that's the LG Optimus Pad. It has a 9-inch screen, so it kind of sits between the big 10-inch tablets like the Motorola Zoom and the Samsung Galaxy Tab and the smaller ones like the HTC Flyer. And I think it looks great. I mean, it doesn't have a 3D screen like the LG Optimus 3D, which is the 3D smartphone LG released. But it does shoot 3D video. Now, do you really want to shoot 3D video? Probably not. But at least it does give it something to differentiate itself from all the other Android tablets. And if they're all running Honeycomb, they all basically have the same user interface as well.
So it's a tablet that you can shoot in 3D on, but you can't actually play it back in 3D.
That's exactly right. It doesn't have one of those glasses-free 3D screens.
That seems entirely pointless.
Well, I guess you could argue that it's like a 3D camcorder. So a lot of camcorders these days, you can shoot in 3D. That doesn't mean you can watch them back in 3D on the camcorder screen. It just means if you have a 3D telly, you can shoot your own 3D video. Although, to be honest, walking around with a giant tablet and using it as a camcorder just sounds completely odd to me.
But if you're one of the 9 people who's got a 3D TV, then maybe this is the tablet for you, the LG.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, a lot of that stuff is how do you, if you're running Android, it looks the same, it does the same stuff, you've got the same size screen, you've got the same dual core, how do you kind of say, look, we've also got this, and if you're in a shop and you're staring at three virtually identical tablets, hey, why not get the one that shoots 3D video? Maybe you'll get a 3D TV in like 3 years or something, and then you'll be glad you have it.
Brilliant. Well, Flora, tell people where they can find more of your stuff.
Do check out CNET UK, and if you do like to get your tech over headphones, check out the CNET UK podcast as well.
Brilliant. Flora, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Well, thanks, Flora. Self-professed best tech journalist in the world, I saw the other day, according to a website that she created. Let's, as a joke,
that sounds like you're being mean, but it's true. She did actually create a website.
Yeah, it's awesome as well. Just before we wrap up here, I just want to go around the table quickly to find out which tablet we're all most looking forward to this year. Duncan, which one tablet do you want this year more than any other?
If I had to pick one, it would be the Motorola Zoom, but it comes with a couple of caveats.
No, I don't want caveats.
One, it's far too expensive, and two, it's Motorola, and Motorola isn't very good about people hacking its products.
Okay.
So we'll see what happens in terms of custom ROMs.
So you want cheaper ones and hackable
ones? I want a 10-inch HTC tablet, but that doesn't exist yet.
Have you considered the HTC Flyer? Oh, no, it's 7-inch, isn't it?
7-inch, yeah.
Okay. Jim, what about you? One tablet, you have to buy it. Okay. I have a gun to your head, and you have to choose right now.
Well, I said I'd like the HTC Flyer, but if I'm only allowed one go, I'll go for the Motorola Zoom.
So
if only because it's more expensive.
Okay. I'm going to be really conventional. I'm going to say I'm probably going to go for the iPad. However...
Oh, really?
Discounting the iPad, I genuinely do think the HP touchpad is the one that people should be looking for.
I thought you were going to go with the touchpad.
Yeah. It's going to have to be. And I do kind of like the idea of having my iPhone but a different tablet because it is kind of the same experience. But I think if I'm being honest with myself... I'm probably going to have to get an iPad because I'm kind of tied into that world. I'm
glued. By tied into that world, do you mean you're a massive Apple fanboy?
No, I just mean that it's more like... And I have to walk past the Apple store on Regent Street every day. I can't resist.
Would you marry an Apple if it was running iOS?
No, I wouldn't. And on that bombshell, we're going to go now. So you can, of course, follow us on Twitter. We are at WideUK. I am at Nate Langson. Duncan, what are you?
I'm at Duncan Gear.
I know you are. And Jim, you are at Jim Hill Writes.
Yes, that's
and
right.
That's Writes with a W, not like the rights that you create for people
You're
to follow.
Right.
Jim Hill is right.
we've also got a fab Facebook page now, which you should go and like. It's facebook.com/UKWired. We put a lot of stuff on there that we never used to do, so you should go and have a look at that. And Duncan, what's our email address?
podcast@wired.co.uk.
Sure is. And we will see you again next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, we're going to talk about the future of tablets next year.
Do you want to do that again?
No.
All right.